Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 29th. I'm John Gibson, back in the pilot seat, and with me early on a Sunday morning after a day yesterday that was filled with baseball for me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm fine. You know, and I was telling Terrio yesterday that they should play the Japan series, you know, during the day on the weekends again. And then when I got to the office, I said, boy, am I glad they're not playing the Japan series during the day on the weekends, because I thought, oh, these two games will end at the same time.
Yeah, it was getting pretty dicey there between the Dodgers and Red Sox and that 18-inning game over there. And luckily, I, you know, took the family out to lunch and was watching a little bit on my iPhone, and it made a whole day of it, because that's how long the game took. But got those 18 innings in, and then got 12 again in Japan baseball at night. So I had 30 innings of very very exciting baseball, close games, you know, heart-stopping stuff. But anyway, let's take the time to thank Jason Koskri again for sitting with me last week. Very much appreciated. Good job. Enjoyed listening to the show. And I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, I had some good comments from that. Some friend called and said, "Yeah, it was a change. We threw a change up." So Jason was a change up.
All right. Well, we're back to throwing high heat, buddy.
Well, I want to thank Jason again, because of the comment that he made. I thought was, in fact, I was trying to tweet it and explain the comment, which was, I thought the funniest thing I'd heard in a long time, was the reason why Hara came back to the Giants was because when they played Casey McGee at second, the third baseman at second base, you know, we speculated that Hara had quit because he'd run out of second baseman.
Right.
So when he said, well, if you can play anybody there, I'm coming back.
Right. It was funny. All right.
Okay.
On this week's show, we've got the Japan Series Game 1 action. We're going to talk about the draft this past week and hit on some notes and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right. So as we talked about before, the Carp and the Hawks tied in the first game of the Japan Series on Saturday, the opener. The last tie in a Japan Series was 2010, Game 6 between the Chunichi Dragons and the Lotte Marines, 15 innings. And for the Carp had a tie in 1986 versus Cebu, and that was 14 innings for some reason.
Yeah, I think the rules, you know, obviously the rules are changing. If this had been last year, if last night had been last year, it would have had to go to 15. But fortunately, right, they saved us.
Right. So NPB changed the rules to make it 12 innings only. And thank goodness, because I'm still jet lagged and I barely made it through 12. And I couldn't imagine if that game had gone to 15 innings, I would have. And I knew we were going to record really early. I just would have hit the tape recorder because I was dying. I was falling asleep, and it didn't look like the Carp were going to score anytime soon. And I wasn't sure about the Hawks. They just kind of looked like they didn't have any more pop. So I don't know. I'm sure somebody would have scored. Probably wouldn't have gone 15, but who knows? Anyway, what was your takeaway from game one? I had a couple.
Offhand, I guess, yeah, both teams' bullpens were up to the task. I think the thing, I guess Kodai Senga, you know, taking an inning to get into game mode.
Mm.
Actually, not even quite an inning. It took him five batters. By then, he was two runs down.
Yeah.
And really, because after that, he was like, hey, guys, I'm back.
Right.
And you have to think, this is a regular season game. The Carp are going to win because it's going to end up being 2-0 because they don't pull Senga for a pinch hitter. Well, Senga could have done he wouldn't have hit the ball hard enough to do what Despaigne did as a pinch hitter. I mean, okay, they pull Kodai Senga in the top of the fifth inning for a pinch hitter for Alfredo Despaigne.
Right.
Despaigne. And he gets an infield single, which I, at first, you know, they called it an error, and then they said, or at least that was on TV, they said it was an error. I'm not in the press box. So that was the Hawks, all the Hawks runs came on that play, mm-hmm. On the result of an infield single and an error. So,
which I called right away. I said, it's going to be a hit and an error.
Well, yeah. Well, it was obviously because, you know, as I said, Josuke Kikuchi, the Cubs' superb second baseman, really had no business getting to the ball in the first place. So I thought the ball beat him to the bag. So, you know, and the other thing, just before I babble on to something else, I have one other thing to babble on, which is
Babylon. I've been there.
Yeah, that's right.
I've seen it.
Yeah, well, you can see the tower from a ways away. But the thing that I think it's worth mentioning is that the Japan series, they have three different scorers. They have a little council of official scorers, which is different from the regular season. So we get more interesting comments, or we get some more interesting scoring. But yeah, and that was the game. And Senga, you know, he allowed four of the first five batters he faced to reach. And the first guy tried to bunt his way on and was just out. So he didn't, you know, basically of the four guys he tried to get out, he didn't get any of them out. And then he retired the last 11 he faced. So that was really the Hawks' chance, you know, to keep, you know, it's funny because it looked like, well, we'll just, in a regular season game, let's just keep it 2-0 and we'll come back at some point.
Right. Yeah, one of my takes was the fifth inning, and I've complained about this, I think you'll know.
You complained about things?
Me? Of course. I should get money. I'm so good at complaining. But anyway.
Wow.
The Carp essentially blew two rundowns in the fifth inning. And,
right.
And I think that led to the demise of their lead. Now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I know what you're talking. Well, they blew it and the Hawks, you know, I think they're used to a little lower. I mean, I'm going to say this. I don't know if it's because they're used to not playing teams that are as good. Uh-huh. From playing in the Central League a lot, but you know, you watch those and you almost, when I watched, okay, so to replay it, Akira Nakamura leads off with a single and then Seiichi Uchikawa singles and they've got runners on first and third, and then they have a two ground outs in which the lead runner is thrown out on the baseline between third and home, and both times they're sort of heading back towards third base, and then you almost see the light bulb pop on in their head.
Almost,
yeah. Well, with Uchikawa, it wasn't a problem because the runner was already standing there on third base, and he saw him and he goes, "Okay, I can go the other way."
But, yeah, I mean, and that was my point of interest right
sure.
there because, well, let's go back to the first one. The first one was that Tomohiro, is that his name? Abe,
yep.
Yeah, Abe had grabs a ground ball at third, and he could literally chase down the runner, but he decides mm-hmm. to throw to home. And mm-hmm. because he threw to home, that allowed the runner from second to move up to third, and the batter runner moved to second. So that was one blown one. And then the second one was a tapper back to Osada, the pitcher, the starting pitcher, and he fumbled it for a second, and that allowed Uchikawa to make his move toward home. And he throws the ball to Tsubasa Aizawa, the catcher, and the catcher decides that he's running Uchikawa back to third base, but there's already a runner on third, so there's no reason to throw the ball because all you have to do is chase the runner back to third and mm-hmm. tag one of them, and then that means that the batter runner doesn't have the opportunity per se to move up to second base. But
by that time he was pretty much
there was
I think the other side of that is again. I thought the Hawks just did a really good job. I mean, other than both of the guys thinking, it took them a second. It took that they were a second faster realizing that the other runners could advance if they played it right.
Yeah, you say good job. I say botched job. I just think.
Okay.
I just think they didn't think ahead. They weren't trying to prevent.
Yeah, you know, the Hawks were certainly thinking were faster on their on. If they weren't faster on their feet, they were at least quicker in
Definitely.
Making the judgment. Which I thought actually I wrote in our story that was huge because then, you know, Despaigne comes up with two outs,
right.
And instead of runners on first and third, he's got so those two outs essentially they weren't meaningless. But you know, if you look at the score sheets as I use on Nikon Sports, it'll have two guys thrown out on the bases.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't cost them anything because they didn't lose a base. They lost the out that they were going to lose anyway. And they didn't exactly. They didn't lose a damn thing. So then DeSpina comes up with runners on second and third, and both runners score as a result of the single and the error. So the Hawks get the Hawks base running wins, essentially scored, kept that game tied.
Right, right. And, I also thought that the Carp manager, Koichi Ogata, going to the pen that early and burning a pitcher to bunt for Osada in the fifth inning, I thought it was a panic move. I thought it was a panic move. I didn't understand it. It made no sense because it put his team on its heels. Remember I said a long time ago, the moves you make in a game send messages to your players and to your team. And I think he told the message to the offense or to the hitters that he didn't think that they were going to be able to produce. So he was going to blow out this one opportunity to score, but it also sent a positive message to the bullpen saying, I have faith in you. But I think it was a mixed message team wise. And they didn't really, they seemed like they hit like the rest of the game, like they didn't understand what was going on and they had no plan. And, it just put the team on their heels, but I didn't get it because why Osada could bunt just as easily as the I forgot who it was. There's some player.
Sone.
I've never seen the whole season. And he comes up to bunt. Now, maybe he's a great bunter, but I didn't think it was necessary to burn your ace pitcher in the fifth inning after he hadn't given up a base runner, right? Hadn't given up any hits the whole game and had one inning where he gives up some a couple of hits and it ends up costing them run. I guess he had walked a batter in the fourth inning, but he hadn't allowed a hit. So one inning, they score a couple runs and then you take him out. So I thought it was just weird.
Yeah, he was motoring. He was having a really impressive start. He didn't really even look like a Daichi Osera. I thought he was just way too good.
Yeah.
I mean, his command is always good, but his location is usually the question. And I thought he was locating his pitches better than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep this guy in the game, absolutely. And if they do, well, of course, it didn't matter in the long run after he gave up the two runs because nobody's going to score anyway, whether it's him or anybody else. But I have to agree with you. I have to think, why do you have to be a Pacific League manager and insist that the reason position players are on your team is to bunt?
Yeah, it was just wacky.
Just because you're playing a Pacific League team doesn't mean you have to stoop to that level.
Yeah, it was wacky.
I guess the other one was interesting. One of the things that, I'm sure I wasn't the only one talking about it, was how good the Hawks catchers are at throwing out base runners,
trying
to steal, and how bad the Carp are. And of course, the Hawks couldn't exploit that because essentially none of their fast runners were on first base with second base open yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't really an option, but sending the runners, in the ninth inning, in the ninth inning, and again in the eleventh inning,
yeah.
Hiroaki Takaya, that was really impressive because he caught the ball. The catcher got the ball on the hop.
Yeah, it was a one.
The ball bounced, and he was on it. It's like he might have barehanded it for all it looked like. And again, the guy's out by 3 feet at second base, like going, no, that didn't just happen. But yeah, so they switched the Hawks catchers were number one in the NPB last year for throwing out runners. So welcome to the Pacific League.
Yeah.
The rest of the Pacific League ain't that good, but the Hawks are.
Yeah. And so overall, I mean, before the game started, I wanted to tweet out my prediction for the series, but I didn't get a chance to. That just tells you how busy I was and locked up with the Dodgers and the babies.
Yeah.
The Dodgers and the babies, not necessarily in that order, but...
Okay.
I have the Carp winning in six, but now that there's a tie, I'm going to amend that to seven games because it looks like they could go and we talked about this before we actually started recording, that they could go as many as 9 games, you said?
They can. They can go 9 games. The game eight is a 12-inning game, necessitated if the first 7 are tied.
Right.
Thanks to the 12-inning tie. And then if there's a game 9, now if there's a game 8, it'll be played, just to keep you in, if there's a game 8, it'll be played in the Pacific League Park. Mm-hmm. So it'd be played at ostensibly at Yafuoku Dome on Monday, on the day after game 7 is scheduled. And if there is, now if that game ends in a tie, then there's game 9.
Now game we're just 9, into the sublime here.
We've never had
the ludicrous, and we are into the sublime. Game 9.
So we're into game 9, which would then return to Hiroshima. And game 9 is the one in Japan where it goes the distance
until somebody wins.
It's unlimited.
Yeah.
It goes until somebody's wins. So
start it early. Quit the 6:30 starts are crazy. I'm looking at the schedule saying, don't you people know this is Japanese baseball? This is MPB. Start the game at 5:30. Don't start it.
Why?
Especially on the weekend. Well, on the weekend.
I know. Well,
start it at 5:30.
Well, I think the real reason, you know, we were looking and I thought, because they changed the rule to 12 innings this year, and I thought, well, this will be like the shortest ties in Japanese baseball history. But of course, that wasn't true, because they had games that were called earlier. And I think it's because the Japan series used to have time limits. They used to have a curfew.
Yes.
Because there were 14, you know, I was looking back this is the shortest tie. 12 innings was the shortest tie in the Japan series since 1975. And the Carps' introduction to Japan series play, and that was an 11-inning game, so I'm sure it was a curfew. And it was probably at that time even sillier, because until 1994, all the Japan series games were played during the day. So
right.
It was a curfew on a day game.
Right. It doesn't make sense now.
It didn't make sense then. I mean, it's like it only made sense in the context of this is how we do it.
This is how we shouldn't do it. But anyway, looking at the overall exactly. series, I like the Carps starting pitchers a little bit better, and I like their speed throughout the lineup. They led the Central League in stolen bases, so they do have that going for them. But as you mentioned previously, the tandem, I'm just looking at Taki Akai shutting down the running game by himself with that cannon from behind the plate as a catcher. But also you got Hiroaki Takaya gunning down runners too. So I just think that they're going to be able to shut down that running game and control that aspect of that. And that's how the Carp have moved a lot of guys into position to get runs.
Well, that and the other one, of course, but I think that, you know, the Hawks are not a slow team. I mean, the Carp are, they have a lot of speed, but, you know, especially when they're using the pitcher, because they have a pitcher running, but yeah, Despaigne, Uchikawa is not fast, and Nakamura is not fast anymore, and they have some guys who are not you know, speed burners, but Uebayashi and Kenji Akashi. And I guess the shout out, I'll have to give a shout out, because I talked to him beginning of October. I saw when the Hawks played at the Lions just before the, in fact, it was the day the Hawks played their last game at Cebu Dome this year at MetLife Dome. And I had a chance to pull over. Keizo Kawashima is one of my favorite players. And he's just had a dynamite postseason. You know, he came on as a substitute. He came on as a pinch hitter yesterday in the eighth inning. And he got a single a one out single in the eighth. And he led off the 11th with a single and started a scoring threat that ended with the bases loaded. And then he drew a walk in the 12th inning. And he was he's having a really good postseason, and he's a favorite player. One of the things I asked him, cause he's one of those, I'll foul off every pitch until I drive you completely insane.
Yes.
Guys. And I asked him, I said, Do you practice fouling off pitches? He says, no, I don't do that. I don't do that. No, that's a lie. That's a lie. No, don't say I did that. He says, okay, I do it off a machine. I said, do you foul off pitches in BP? And he says, never, 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 never. And he says, but I do it off a machine.
All right. So never, never, never.
He doesn't subject humans. Well, I think that's the reason. Well, exactly, because it's considered a weapon of mass destruction, so he's prohibited by the Geneva Convention.
among others. But yeah. I like the car. I like their ability to score at any point in the lineup. At least before last night, they just looked. Like I said, I thought their manager put them on their heels with that fifth inning, and after that, they just looked like they were never going to score. And you know, all the guys with power throughout the lineup. I just like the way that stacks up. And of course, I'm hoping that a Central League team can break this run of Pacific League championships, including. Domination by the SoftBank Hawks, who have been there, I guess, since the 2000s. They have been to the Japan Series 5 times, and they've won all 5 times. So it's time for that to stop.
Well, I'll mention it again. This is 5 years straight already where the Central League hasn't won, which is equals the second longest Japan Series drought in NPB history.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Pacific Leagues early in the 50s when they went 5 years without. So if the Hawks were to win, and I'm going to pick the Hawks. I picked the Hawks in 5, which is unlikely.
Wait a second. You made a pick? You made a prediction?
I did.
Why? Yeah, why? What I happened? Did. What happened? Tell me about this thing. What happened? Who did this to you? Who made you do this?
It was Keizo Kawashima. He threatened to foul pitches off me.
Off your head? Where?
Must have been.
So you picked the Hawks in 5. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I thought, you know, actually, ironically, I thought the, you know, I think the Carp are obviously a better match against, or a stronger team than the DeNA BayStars last year. But I also think that Koichi Ogata is not as clever a manager as Alex Ramirez, that he's going to make that pay off. So I'm thinking 5-6 maybe, but. I'll go with 5.
After his panic move in game 1, I'm with you on that. But maybe he will get better, and maybe some of the brass there on the bench will help him work through the games. But I'm not.
I think they'll get over it. I think, you know, he's one of those guys, more so than Kudo, to be honest. More so than Kudo, he's a manager who tends to let his guys play baseball.
Right.
You know, he's usually the guy who says, "You guys know what to do. Go do it."
Mm-hmm.
I trust you. Kudo's more like, I know what you guys, I trust you guys to prepare for the game, but then I'm in charge.
Right.
And bring your bunting bats.
Okay. All right. But perhaps by the time we talk to you next week, this series will be over. But as to my prediction, probably not. We'll still have games to go. So that'll be fun. Let's move on.
John, are you looking forward to game 9?
No. No mas. At that point, you just think, you know, please end. You know, please end. This is torturous. It's torturous for the fans and everybody. Just let's get this done within 7 games and get out of here. All right.
Okay.
Making a 4-seam transition, we're going to talk about the draft that took place this past Thursday. And stop when you've heard me say this before, but again, the Nippon Ham Fighters got the top pitching prospect in the draft. So it seems to me, and I didn't look it up, and it just seems to me that in the past 7 or 8 years, either Nippon Ham or the SoftBank Hawks keep getting the top pitching prospects. Now, they don't always pan out, and we haven't even seen them, a couple of them with the Hawks haven't even pitched on the first team. But it just seems like they always roll around and end up with the top pitching prospect. Now, you said before we started taping that it seems like the Fighters are like undefeated in the lottery that takes place when multiple teams try to draft the same player.
Yeah, usually. I mean, I can think of, I mean, the Sugano, Tomoyuki Sugano. And so last year they got Kotaro Kiyomiya, and I go back to Sho Nakata and Young Daikon.
And Kyohei and, Arihara.
Yeah, I mean, more than I remember. I mean, they've been pretty much, they've been almost like, you know, I didn't get a chance to go to the draft, so I didn't get to write yet another story about stupid questions reporters ask on draft day, such as, you know, what were you wearing, any lucky underwear or lucky neckties?
Stop it.
You know?
Stop it. Get no, out I'm of people's kidding. Pants.
Well, that was not, I didn't make no,
I'm
this
saying,
stuff
I'm
up.
Telling, I'm asking, I'm begging the reporters here in Japan to get out of people's pants.
I know.
Pants.
Well, that was all because I think a Daichi Osera was selected by the CARP after the CARP executive who was assigned to pull the lottery revealed that he was wearing red underwear.
No revealings.
The other thing, okay, so we've got the Nippon Ham. Now, the interesting, I guess the interesting thing about that is the guy that Nippon Ham selected in their fallback first round draft.
Uh-huh.
Because the Japanese system is such that in the first round, teams name their players uh-huh. ahead of time. There's no advantage to being the last place team in the first round. All the teams reveal their picks. They lock in their picks, and then they're revealed, and then the players who have been selected by more than one team, they have a draft lottery, which sometimes goes well, and sometimes not, because managers are sometimes not certain about whether the lot is the winning one or not. It doesn't say you're the winner.
Right.
They all look the same.
Yes, Mitsuru Manaka.
So,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. You're the you know who we're talking about.
You're the shining example, yes.
Exactly. Well, we've seen it happen a few times. Anyway, the one of the top picks in the draft, one of the top names in the draft was this guy you were mentioning, or at least you were mentioning in regards to the fighters, is Kosei Yoshida, who's a high school pitcher, just 17 now. And there were a lot of people saying, you know, how many people are going to go after Yoshida in the first round? Well, it turned out nobody. So the fighters were able to snare him as their alternate first round pick. And don't sneer at the alternate first round picks because because the you know, I'm as a Swallows fan, I'm forever grateful that the Swallows failed to get first two picks in the year that Yuki Saito was in the draft, because they lost out on Yuki Saito, and then they lost out on the next guy with the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up with some bum named Tetsuto Yamada.
Yes.
So it's like you see this over. I mean, you don't see it a lot, but you see it probably once a year where the second or third pick of a team turns out to be better than all those other guys put together.
Yes, exactly. Well, a lot of players from the Toin High School team are expected to do well, and they had four players selected in Thursday's draft, and that
it's interesting, but you know, Toin could already, you know, somebody said that they may be surpassing Yokohama High School as the most, they probably do now in terms of active players, because, or at least they will within a couple of years, because Daisuke Matsuzaka doesn't have a lot of gas left in the tank.
He was a Yokohama grad. Yes,
Goto of the DNA Bay Stars is retired, so he was Matsuzaka's teammate in high school. Gomez, they call him now. So basically, Osaka Toin, which could have a pretty fair all-star team. They're a little shy on, well, I mean, yeah, Fujinami, and they've got a pretty fair all-star team. About half of them are playing for the Cebu Lions, but
right.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And the other thing that interested me, and I mentioned on draft day, that there were six first round position players.
Hmm.
This is a huge thing for Japan. And like somebody said, and I don't know, but they're almost all, you know, slick fielding, you know, infielders with good arms. But I think we're seeing a change in Japan towards stronger high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is attributable to some degree to Shohei Ohtani's influence in, oh, this guy, you know, did, you know, worked out in high school. And I think it's a little bit of a change, first of all, because middle school and high school coaches in Japan traditionally followed Japan dogma of that weight training is bad. And I think more and more of the coaches are going, okay, go ahead, you know, go ahead and do that if you want to do it. Right. And there are some coaches that are encouraging it. And this is a huge difference.
Yeah.
So that we're getting, yeah. And, you know, a lot of these big schools, I mean, Toin has a huge weight room. Of course, they had Shintaro Fujinami, who didn't know anything about weight training after 3 years of high school at a top baseball factory. So obviously there are issues, but it's getting better to at least where there's that possibility that the kids can get bigger and stronger when they have a chance to become bigger and stronger.
Right. And so one of the four players who was drafted from Toin was Akira Neo, who went to the Dragons, mm-hmm. and he's considered to be the jewel of the position players crop, I suppose you could mm-hmm. put it that way. And he's very yeah. young. He's not that big, but he's a two-way player. And I did see an interview right after the Dragons got the selection, because they had to do a lottery, and new manager Tsuyoshi Yoda was the first person to pick in the lot of the four. Mm-hmm. So he grabbed it right away and they won it, and they have the rights to sign him. The kid is a Dragons fan, so he's looking forward to doing that. But I did see this interview right after with Yoda, mm-hmm. who said that they talked about the fact that this is a two-way player who plays the infield and also pitches. And Yoda said, hey, look, we'll sit down and we'll talk to him and discuss the possibilities and see what we can do. So to me, that sounds like they'll sit down and tell him, son, that dream's over. But but he's in the Central League, and he's going to be able to have some at-bats in that respect. And the Dragons, actually, if this kid is a shortstop, you said, I think they could use a second baseman.
I think so.
Yeah, they could use a second baseman, and he's really young, so maybe he might get some starts at second base. I could see that happening.
Well, I can see him being a two-way player. I mean, I think, and the reason I can see it is because that's the thing. People, you know, 5-10 years ago, like, go away. I mean, the only player other than Shohei Ohtani that I've heard recently was, I knew Shohei Nakata when in his first rookie camp, when they were busy trying to see how poorly he could play third base. They also tried him out in the bullpen. The thing is, he has a good arm, but he really didn't have, you know, he could throw fairly hard,
mm-hmm.
but from the field, flat-footed, he could throw hard. He has a good arm, but on the mound, I mean, he was basically a junk ball guy. And so they thought, now we're just going to focus on that. But I do remember him getting time in the bullpen, because he had also, like most of these guys, been a pitcher in high school. So they gave it a shot. They gave it a thought, which is, of course, he was being managed by Hideki Kuriyama, the same guy who came up with the plan to use Ohtani two ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the thing. People are actually open. That really opened people's eyes to the possibility that some people could do it. And if you got two guys who can do it, then they could be position players. They don't have to be DHs.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. I don't see him being a two-way player, but again, the Dragons are going to be in transition, and I think they could use a second baseman, and I think if he can play that position, then he might get an opportunity. But I mean,
it's unlikely that he can do it, because it's such a tough learning curve, but you never know. But on the other hand, if you assume he can't do it, then that's definitely a mistake. If you just assume that people can't do it because it's too hard, like, you know, as we know, Ohtani can't hit in the majors because it's too hard.
Hashtag high heat.
You're still taking those shots at people. I love it. They're not even veiled shots. I mean, they're just...
No, I mean, I'm just saying that people assume that
they do.
That's the way it is. That's the way it is for a reason, when the only reason that's the way it is because that's the way it is. That ain't no reason.
Right.
So so opening your eyes to that possibility is big, because there will be guys. I guarantee you there are guys who could have done it, who were not given the opportunity, who could have been even more special than they were.
Right.
I mean, Trevor Hoffman is a guy people mention that essentially he was a shortstop. Most of them in America are shortstops.
Right.
Jay Jackson told me that he was a guy who would have wanted to do both.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I'm sure there's really, a lot of guys out there. So
that's my point. It's not that it's easy or that it's going to be the thing, but it's going to be a thing. And it's like saying to Michael Jackson, stop moving your feet. You know, you're a singer. don't do both.
Yeah.
Just
leave
just
the dancing
sing.
to the back, you know, the backup dancers.
The people behind you, exactly. Yeah. Stop that stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm just not sure if they've drafted him as I have to believe that they drafted him as a position player first.
Oh yeah.
And then,
absolutely.
And then pitching will be on the back burner. But you know me, I love to see a guy come in from second base and face a couple hitters and go back to second base. That'd be awesome. But that's just me. Moving right along, we have some notes that I'd like to get into, and mm-hmm. we'll make a two-seam transition into that. And I want to start with, so what's this mean? And the meaning behind that is, so Taguchi was made the head coach on the top team with the Orcs Buffaloes, moving up from farm manager. Now, this happened quite soon after Norifumi Nishimura was named the manager, but we didn't talk about it. And I wanted to get your thoughts, because I think Taguchi sitting close to the big chair, but still hiding in the mm-hmm. shadows. I'm not sure how to process this move at all. And I know that you've talked about the fact that he prefer not to manage. You think mm-hmm. he has told you that in the past, but I just see that as this is a strange move or something that we could use to predict the future. I just don't know.
Predict the future. Okay. This is a medium market.
Use to try to predict the future. How's that?
Okay. Okay. I have no idea. I haven't spoken to him. I haven't spoken to him since, you know, last time he says, no, never be a coach in Japan. Never be a coach in Japan. And here he is, the farm team manager. So I don't know. I should mail him and find out what's going on, but I don't expect to get the truth. Yeah. And I say that in a joking way, because he's always very frank with me. And I think it is I do believe he's sincere, but I also believe that, old school affiliation, your group ties with people, he was a member of that Oryx organization for a long time. And those ties are so strong in Japan.
Yes.
Those networks are so strong. And if those people can twist your arm, and it's hard to resist, you know,
well, look at Tatsunori.
Bailing out your buddies.
Yeah, look at Tatsunori sure. Hara. He's cut the line a few times, and all of a sudden he's getting roped back into
quitting.
It.
I know he's
never been fired. He's walked away each time.
He's Al Pacino in Godfather 3. I keep trying to leave, and they keep bringing me back. That's it. Godfather 3. That's the Giants next year.
I hope this move, I hope this move means that Taguchi will be moving closer toward a managerial spot, and he'll be making some decisions and help with, because I remember with Nishimura on the bench before that he had a lot of help, and he used his coaches at Lotte when he was the manager there. So I'm looking for a lot of input, and hope to see him out there, out in front, and even getting a lot of interviews.
Well, I do look forward to that, because at least when he's on the first team, I'll get to see him when Oryx comes up to Tokyo, which is good. And
true.
I love Nishimura is one of those guys who has these really, like Haruki Ihara, the former Lions manager, both really smart guys, and both guys who are really willing to talk about their reasoning for doing things, which I just love, because you know, they don't say, you know, stop bothering me, kid, I'm busy.
you usually get that a lot, I'm sure.
I do get that a lot.
Especially the kid part.
Hashtag hi.
Yeah. Well, okay, they say don't bother me, sensei, I'm busy. Since my hair has turned gray. So, but don't bother me, I'm busy thing. But Haruki Hara and Nishimura, I'd say, like, why did you bunt? Why did you bunt in this situation when you had the top of the order coming up with, you're two runs down in the fifth inning and you've got the top of the order coming up with runners on first and second. Didn't you think your guys could play? He says, no, we have to score the first run first. We can't worry about the second run.
Right.
Until we've scored the first.
Yep. Yeah.
And so, thank you. I appreciate the candor and the explanation, because it's not always, things aren't always what they seem, and the reasons aren't often what you expect. Sometimes they're out of the twilight zone, and sometimes you think, you realize that this is actually the way people in Japan see baseball. So it's sometimes very enlightening in that respect.
Okay. All right, moving along. Yusei Kikuchi, the left-hander for the Seibu Lions, who is expected to make the jump to the big leagues during the offseason, has made Scott Boras his agent, I saw in a report. So I actually had seen him making the move, because I didn't think any big market teams would really go for him this season. I thought he's kind of not under the radar, but he just hasn't created a lot of buzz. So I thought medium market teams might be, you know, the Texas teams, the Seattles, the San Diegos maybe. And, you know, not that San Francisco is a small market, but I thought the Giants would be in there. But now that Boras is going to be his agent, I guess they're going to have to bring, teams are going to have to bring a lot of money. So I was thinking that the Angels would, who really need pitching, would be a good landing spot for him, especially with Ohtani there. Giving them a left-handed pitcher, because I didn't see a lot of success. I mean, we did see a lot more Angels this year on NHK than usual, but I didn't see a lot of successful starting left-handers with that team. So I thought that would be a good landing spot for him, for both sides, actually. Get some draw with the Japanese who are already latched on to Shohei Ohtani and having another guy there. And also, that's a good park to pitch in for him, and it's an easy transition. So, of course, Seattle also is appealing, I think. But those were the two teams that I thought, trying to predict where he might go. But I'm thinking medium market teams to small market teams for him.
Well, I think, he'll go wherever the combination of the money and his, and, you know, well, if,
yes,
okay,
start with
first
the money
of all,
with Boras as his agent.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the combination of the money and where he wants to go. And now that he's picked Scott Boras, I think where he wants to go is no longer part of the equation.
It's not even on the back burner. Just get that pot and throw it away.
Sorry. Okay. We've got $70 million for you to play for Devil's Island. Okay. That's where you're going, son. Okay, don't worry about bringing your razor. So that was interesting, and he said, you know, this whole thing was funny because of all the denial about it. Now the Yusei Kikuchi story. Well, funny because 2 years ago he asked the Lions to post him in the future, and they said, okay, we'll think about it. Usually what happens when that happens, usually when a player says that, next year he's posted.
Right.
Okay. Or next year he gets a promise. Well, when somebody reported that the Lions had agreed to it, the Lions went into, you know, you can't say we agreed to it because we haven't announced we've agreed to it this summer. Haruhiko Suzuki, who's now their former head of baseball operations, had a bit of a spaz. And then about a week later, the Lions came out and said, yes, we have agreed to post him. And then so when the Japan series end, excuse me, when the Lions are eliminated from the postseason, then they say the first thing the team president does and says, oh, yes, and we'll allow Kikuchi to go if he wants, which is fine. And we're all going, yes, we kind of guessed that. Not to be upfront about it. We didn't expect the Lions to be upfront about it, but we guessed that. And then Kikuchi comes out and says, well, I haven't said anything. He didn't say anything last year in contract talk. So he said, I haven't said anything to the team. So why are you asking me? So, of course, he answered that when he picks, if you did in fact pick Scott Boras' agent, he's answered the fact that he does want to go, and he's basically going to go where whoever pays him the most. And, you know, people have asked me where I think he goes, and I don't really have a clue. Big market, small market, it's whoever thinks okay, you know, who wants to pay the most for a lefty who's had a, you know, minor injury issues and who can throw, you know, 90 up to 95 miles an hour and has good command of the secondary pitches. And somebody said, who would want him? And I said, well, I don't know. Can't think of anybody who'd want a left-hander who can do that stuff.
#high heat.
So the answer is pretty much everybody will be thinking he could use us. But the other question is that because of the collective bargaining agreement between MLB and its players union, the market for free agent talent at that end of the spectrum, now he's still under 30, is not what it was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas 5 years ago, it was easy to see him getting $100 million plus, right now, I see him being more of a $70, $80 million guy.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. That's my thought. But,
okay, yeah.
I don't think it's a big market, small market thing. I think it's people are going to, you know, if a team thinks that's a fit for them, they'll do it. If it's the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Milwaukee Brewers even. So.
Yeah, okay. All right. The reason I looked at the market situation is because I was thinking about the money, but I didn't think that he was creating enough buzz for these teams, because these teams like to make a splash at not only get quality players, but make a splash. And he's not creating the buzz to join a Yankees type or a Dodgers type, in my opinion. But that's just, you know, that's just on the outside looking in. I don't know what the teams are actually thinking. Yeah.
Okay. On another note, I just, you know, my Twitter feed is just going along as we're recording this, and Jeff Fletcher, who writes for the Orange County Register,
my old paper,
said something. I think he was listening to. Have you got him? Has he got this live feed or something? He said something I just learned. Game one of the Japan series was called a tie after 12 innings last night / today. They basically just replay the game and make it a best of eight. so Jeff, who I met in California, so the people are in America, of course, that's timely because of what happened, and Dave Waldstein of the New York Times was saying, let, you know, we should do something to get rid of these, you know, to eliminate the possibility of these 18-inning nightmares, not because the game itself is bad, but because it now can impact the rest of the series when you use up your whole bullpen in one game, game three.
Yeah.
So I think that's something to think about. And the other thing, I guess I'll come back to this, is that when I started going to the winter meetings in 2014, I was blown away by one thing, and it wasn't the Scott Boras circus. what really got me was growing up in Japanese baseball, essentially becoming a baseball writer in Japan, I was so accustomed to hearing foreign players, foreign coaches, foreign writers saying, this isn't the way it's done in America, equals, this is wrong. This isn't the way we do it in the majors. Japan is crazy. And I was used to, you know, and every MLB Japan All-Star Series, people came, you do what in Japan? Are you kidding me?
Right.
How can people live, you know, how can people live like that? You know, it's like saying, you know, it's like a guy coming into your house and saying, you mean that one TV in the living room is the only one you've got?
The Wi-Fi?
I know, you know, virtual reality? What? How can you... You know, why don't you just put a bullet in your head? You know, so, but that was the attitude. And then what got me at the winter meetings in 2014, so many people saying, we need a better system. Let's look at how they're doing things in Japan, because that looks attractive.
Mm.
You know, days off during the week was one, pitchers going every 7 days and instead of every five.
Right.
Instead of every five or six, a playoff system where it's, you know, where the division champion actually has real advantages instead of a day off.
Starting spring training in the dead of winter on February 1st.
That part I didn't hear. I must have been hearing that one. I must have been going to run to the coffee machine for that one.
I bet we never hear that one. All right. All right. Well, thanks for your insight on that. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. So this one comes from Dave in Baltimore. He says, I was listening to the latest podcast today, and this was a couple weeks ago, of course, and heard you mention talking to Casey McGee about how you'd never seen the team schedule makeup games during the Climax series. And I had vaguely remembered that the PL pennant winning Eagles had gotten criticized in 2013 for scheduling a makeup game with Oryx during the first stage. I guess it was considered unfair that they weren't sitting around idle while waiting for the final stage. So anyway, Dave said he looked up the games on the MPB site, and he saw that there were two games played against Oryx during the first stage. So, and he also said what's funny about that is that Casey McGee played in those games and had six hits.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember it. And I think what differentiates those games there, those were more like makeups for the sake of makeups, whereas we were talking about games that had impact on the race, in that a team that was actually contending for a playoff spot might have had to play those makeup games while another team had basically been slotted into the third place slot and was playing in the Climax series. That was the difference that I was pointing out. But yes, I did not remember that those games had been played, and there were probably some other ones in the past that had been made up probably at the same time or very close to Climax series games. But it's unfortunate. Those games, I just don't see why they couldn't get those games played before then at that time too in 2013. But this year, I really, like I said before, MPP really got off the hook with the Tigers just kind of fading at the end and fading out of contention, or else that could have been a real mess.
Well, they are generally makeup games. They're makeup games between teams in which that have no outcome on the pennant race. And the Tigers one was a topic for about 2 days, because it took, you know, it was a topic in the weeks leading up to when should we schedule the makeup game. And I guess the stupid thing was that they scheduled it. I think we can come out and say
you're pointing to one stupid thing. I'm impressed that you can whittle it down to one.
I can. In that, and here's this. The postseason started on a Saturday, and there were days off. Thursday and Friday, there was no baseball. And then the Tigers and the Eagles had makeup games on the same day that the playoffs started. Like, what the heck?
It's nutty.
Yeah, I mean, like, how? It is nutty.
It's nutty. It's like nutty. The bad dream that you can't wake up from. Yeah.
Okay. How do you? Okay. That's one of those, like, philosophical ones.
Yeah. I mean,
if you can't wake up, how do you know you had a bad dream? Okay.
You can't wake up from the dream, but you can. You end up eventually waking up and remembering the dream. It's just that.
Oh, okay. There's a part of that. I don't know about you.
Sometimes
it's morning. It's too slow.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
You know.
Oh no. I understand. I understand. Okay.
I'm just seeing here on the Yahoo page that the Giants are releasing Koji Uehara. So we will talk about that next week, probably, because we're at the end of our show here today. But that's interesting news, and
because he just had surgery on his knee for the umpteenth time, okay, so let's talk about that next week.
Yeah, we will talk about that next week. So okay. Thank you for listening, and as you noticed, neither one of us is at the Japan series over in Fukuoka and Hiroshima, and we won't be, so we won't have those kind of scrum discussions that we like to throw in sometimes when probably usually it's Jim who's at the Japan series, so we won't have that stuff, but we will look back at the games. We've got some interesting things to talk about next week, including some very compelling high heat questions. But anyone else who does have high heat questions, feel free to send them, because we will need them once the Japan series is over to keep us going in our during our off-season program, our off-season workout program. Send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heat, or you can leave us a note on the Facebook page, and we'll get to it next week. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy your Japan series.
And we'll see you at the ballpark if we get really, really lucky.